This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Kyle, Luke, and Jimmy. Today, we're going to be covering Season 7, Episode 9 of the CW show, The 100, entitled The Flock. So we have a lot going on at Sanctum in this episode, and a little bit more into, well, a lot of insight into Octavia, Echo, Dioza, and Hope at Bardo and their training to become disciples.
Yeah, and you guys know the drill. Every week, we put on our Bingetown TV Twitter account to see what you guys thought of the episode. We had three options. We had loved it, which was 47%. We had it was good, 28%. And we had could have been better, 25%.
That's so a pretty even split.
Yeah, I find that kind of surprising because I didn't have much to complain about. It wasn't the best episode because, you know, like everything on Bardo was just backfilling to get us back caught up to where we are in the modern timeline on Bardo with Clark and friends. But it was good. I had a couple of minor complaints, specific character decisions that we'll get into. But overall, I liked it.
Once again, J.R. Bourne, MVP.
Oh, my God. He's so good.
He carried the, I would say he carried the episode.
Yeah, we'll get into that later. But yeah.
I was on team.
We were
it was good.
A conversation before this, and it's just like we shit talk so badly on Russell's character early in the story in like first two episodes, I would even say.
Yeah.
And just ever since then, it's just been up and up. Every single scene, he's been getting better. He's more compelling. And he's just like, I like him. It's just, I don't see how that story is going to connect. It feels like we're watching two separate shows now.
It really does.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
And I'm almost going to say that the Sanctum storyline's heating up right now.
It is. I mean, props to Jason Rothenberg because, and I've said it before on the podcast, he promised us that we would care about Shade Hayda. You know, and I've said this before a million times, we did not care about him at all last season and to start this season. You know, we were like, do not need that part to be, you know, to be happening this season.
I think we care about J.R. Bourne.
Oh, my God.
I think that's what it is.
That's true. You know,
he is incredible. We're going to say multiple times for the rest of this episode, but.
Yeah, but before we go even deeper on him, we're going to treat this episode and we're going to split it into two buckets. And the first bucket's going to be all of the Bardo flashback ending up with, you know, the scene couple like a day before Clark gets there. And then we're going to crush through the Alpha storyline on Sanctum.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to preface this. Are we ready to get right into it?
Three months earlier.
Let's do it. 3 months earlier, we start at Bardo with Anders, Hope, Dioza, and Octavia.
Yeah, and the first conversation we get seems to take place just like a little bit after our group accepted to be basically disciples. Like they're going to go into the training. We saw that at the end of two episodes ago.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we get a little bit of insight into Anders saying, at least the writers were smart enough to say, like make Anders question, like he knew that they weren't just going to be disciples. Like
right.
He's like, you guys got to see some stuff first. I understand that. And that was kind of a complaint I had before. I was like, there's no way Anders should trust them after what he knew about Octavia. But, you know, they did a good job with it.
So, and the first thing that he decides to show them is what will happen to us if we don't win this last war that we've seen so much about. And he immediately says, we're going up to the surface. I loved and hated the line where Hope tries to act tough to him and says, oh, pretty brave that you came here alone with us four girls. And he was just like, yeah, well, not really, because I'll take you up. You can't get back down if I'm dead.
That's like a theme of the episode, basically, is Hope trying to step and him shutting her down.
Yeah, so let's clarify this real quick. Does he have to have a voice command? Because Dioza will rip his freaking eye out and take him back down if he needs to.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
and they know that.
Yeah, he knows what she does.
Maybe, so he... I mean,
it looked like he used the eye scanner again, right?
Yeah, he did.
It could have been a special circumstance.
Yeah,
he's
I'm
like,
sure.
You know, if I'm not like talking, like don't let these motherfuckers back down here because like it's Dioza and Octavia.
He says, does he say if I don't say so, it won't
go
down?
Was, if I don't tell them to bring us back down.
Okay.
Said, I think I said the eye, but he did say something like that.
Well, so, he uses the eye to go up.
Yeah.
And still scans him. Yeah.
So we saw from the preview last week that there's the entire surface of Bardo is covered in this crystal structure thing. And he essentially says, I have the quote here, particulate matter in the air is lethal to humans. It will literally calcify you from the inside out. And he opens the door to the surface and Octavia immediately says, Gabriel saved us.
Yeah.
My complaint about that is, okay, there's a couple things here.
Yeah.
So, okay, Gabriel saved us, but it was a complete guess. He didn't know what he was doing when he made that decision. And also, like, he made that decision because he was hating on Levitt, but now we know Levitt is our goddamn homie again. There's no way Levitt's bad after this episode. So it's like, what tipped Gabriel off not to listen to Levitt when we are all still Team Levitt?
It was right? Still a bad plan, though. We find out a little later that Levitt didn't have a plan.
Yeah, he said you can survive for
an hour or two,
yeah. And he was going to think of something. But it's still – I'm not getting into the Levitt part yet. I'm just saying, like, Gabriel didn't know what he was doing when he just said, decided to betray them. It was more of just he wasn't trusting Octavia's
I literally think that Levitt and Gabriel had the same exact thought process, except backwards. Like, Levitt's saying, you're going to die here. I'll give you 2 hours outside. And Gabriel's saying – I'm not going outside. We're going to die. Maybe we can be prisoners and stay alive here.
Yeah, that's like, a good point. Yeah, just, we'll figure it out just, inside you know, versus that, we'll figure it out outside.
Gabriel didn't know.
I agree. So I mean, it was totally a jump.
It was a leap of faith right there, which, fine. Okay, Gabriel's back to being not the worst, but still, I'm still don't like that decision compared to how every single decision before that scene
was calculated.
Was so smart and awesome, and I praised every second of it. It was just, you know, that
man,
was just
a couple weeks
moment.
Ago, you loved Gabriel, hated Levitt, and now you hate Gabriel and love Levitt. Wow.
I don't know. So basically, okay, fine. There's nothing negative against Gabriel, but is it also nothing negative against Levitt? They both thought what they were doing was right. Is that where we're at? Like, neither of them are going to be.
Yes. That's where I'm at
against
now.
Against Sermony. Yep. Okay, sure. Mm-hmm. It was done in a weird way. I didn't love it.
I mean, but like, now we're thinking like Levitt would figure it out in those 1 to 2 hours. And then Gabriel was, we'll figure it out while we're inside. But Levitt, I don't think Levitt was thinking that they were going to execute them. Was he? Wouldn't he just assume that they would put him through the training that they're going to put them through for the rest of this episode?
Then why would he have sent him out there?
I just don't know. Well,
that's why we thought he could be bad back then. Yeah. You know, the whole thing is weird.
It's weird. Yeah, it was written in a weird way that made you question the characters, where they were coming
from. Yeah, all of them.
I mean,
all of them.
Later on, we're going to get to it, but Levitt says something like, I needed time to figure something out. I think in subsequent episodes, we're going to hear more about what his potential plan would have been, maybe, because
he made it sound like there was no plan yet.
Yeah,
right,
not at all.
That he was going to have to, he needed time to think. You know, he needed time to figure it out.
Oh, to figure anything out. Yeah. I thought you meant like he had a plan and just.
Oh,
had to,
no.
Like,
I think he just needed time to figure it out.
No, he didn't have a plan.
Okay, so Anders says, shows them this crystal encased surface of Bardo and says, this is what happened to the Bardoans who lost their last war. This is all that's left. And Octavia has an awesome line where it kind of clicks in her mind. She says, so the 10-foot aliens with superior technology who built this place got genocided and turned to stone by the enemy we're about to fight. And Anders is like, yep,
that's our girl.
Now you know.
And Dioza says, I do love me an unwinnable war.
Yes, she does. And then we get opening sequence, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Da-ba-da-da-da-da-da. And then we move on to our
So is what we learn there that basically what the Bardos, what the disciples plan is to pawn off the idea that they are not the bad guys. Then the bad guys are the ones that are out there that froze the original Bardoans, right? That released, which we later find out is Gem 9. Right? Like the enemy is a third faction. It's not Clark and the Sanctumites.
Right.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't they even say later, doesn't Levitt say we don't know who we're fighting?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so they don't know. So
meaning
this
is a whole new species.
Yes. Yeah. I think
that was one of the first pieces of info that like kind of solidified that it was like another being that they were fighting. Because I feel like we've talked earlier that like is the fight against mortality in general and like the next evolution is to just be immortal beings as like the human race.
I mean, that's the thing we were talking about earlier too, Luke. Like, they said specifically that when Clark shows up with the key, the war begins. But they don't even know how. Like, why does that correlate to any war starting?
Okay,
do the beings show up because the key's here?
So I think we have to go back to our pilot Because Becca Franco was the one that opened up the portal to that place that had the white light.
Right, right.
All that Judgment Day.
I think
now.
The key is the only thing that can open that white light right. place. That's why having the key starts the war, because they can access
they go
that.
To it.
And I think the enemies are in that white light.
See,
place.
I okay. think is that, that right? no, no. Okay, I'm all in until you say the enemies are in that white place. I think that the whole idea of there being this third unknown species could potentially just be the way that Bill and the disciples are like trying to basically red herring this. Like their main goal is to get the mind drive or get the flame and then go to the Judgment Day. And there could literally be no third faction is what I'm saying. That's kind of what I thought. Like there's a potential for that. There's no real other enemy. It's really just their way of just trying to get them on board so they can get Clark, get the key, go to Judgment Day.
I would agree with that.
The planet Bardo, slight parallel to Earth after the nuclear war, and like that was their like they're trying to escape that extinction event. That's Bill's whole thing was trying to get off of Earth because it's about to be unsurvivable.
Because wouldn't it feel weird if they introduce a new just hypothetically they introduce like a new alien, the movie Alien species that's the real enemy? Like, wouldn't that be weird in the last?
I 100% agree with you.
I just don't think they're gonna add another villain when we already have Shade Hada, we have Bill, we have Judgment Day. It's like now we got this new species. I think this is a red herring to get our main squad on their board and kind of like. This could open the door to Levitt still being a little evil, but
he is.
I don't believe that, but I'm just saying.
I want to move on to the next scene, but Kyle and Luke, you guys are on the same page as this last war is against humans and mortality. Like, in general, you think it's like...
Not so much that anymore, but I just don't think it is another species.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. I like it. Okay, so the next scene is, I have them in my notes as the Bardo girls. That's Hope, Octavia, Dioza, and Echo, and Levitt. And it's kind of the first...
He's in the Bardo girls.
It's kind of... Well, it's N. Levitt. He's the guy, you know? It's like,
love that guy, Levitt.
It's like Charlie's Angels and Charlie. But yeah, so that's our first interaction, and they're all like kind of like, hey, man. What's up?
Dioza.
Yeah, Dioza is grilling
him. That was exactly what we wanted
to ask. Yeah, Dioza is us on previous episodes asking him what we'd want to ask him.
And he says right back, hey, it's survivable for an hour or two. I just needed time to figure something out. And that's all he really gives them. And then she chirps back with, boy, you sure do have a lot of jobs around Bardo.
Yeah.
Huh? Just showing up right where we are, huh, Levitt?
I was just going to say that.
Yep.
I mean, I know it's like a little thing too. Like, oh, you're just the janitor, right? At the right spot. Like, well.
Octavia defends him, right?
We find out right away that Octavia still has full trust.
Yeah.
In him,
oh, yeah.
She's stretching, looking great.
As of right now, we're kind of assuming that both Gabriel and Levitt are in the right.
Yeah, I'm full in now. Like, I feel like in the preview is the only thing that made me question what Levitt's true like mindset is, but I think he's good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it was very sketchy to see him be the janitor, have that whole situation happen, and then see a trailer where he's automatically right next to Anders on his right side without any explanation, because it's just obviously the trailer. I'm thinking, okay, he's bad, you know?
So I guess I'm also jumping to a conclusion based on the trailer again. So they obviously do this stuff to be misleading a little bit, so we don't know. We don't know where that's going to go.
It's working.
It is working.
So we're moving on through. Levitt says he warns it's pivotal for you guys to keep your emotions under control. Like, Anders is taking a personal interest in you guys. He's going to be handling your training himself, specifically. And he rarely does this for people. Like, he's usually not the one in charge. But he's going to try and amp you up. Like, it's a whole thing. Keep your emotions under control. Anders brings in a couple new recruits that are level ones or whatever, and our girls just absolutely mop the floor like Levitt with these scrubs, and I love it.
Such badasses.
Love it.
It would have been weird if they didn't, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were going to.
It's just how Hope handled it is not the way that a rational person should have been treating the whole situation, because she's all cocky and looking Anders in the face, and it's like, just play the part. Like, you're not helping yourself or anybody.
Yeah. Then he brings up Dev, shakes her. So at this point, Anders 2, Hope 0.
He also brings up Orlando, which I thought was cool. He says, Anders was Orlando's mentor. And he said Orlando was one of our best. And I want to ask this because Kathleen's not on this episode and she is full on Orlando's alive. It's a conspiracy theory. What do we think? Is Orlando alive or is there no reason? To
keep I don't see point? The reason he would
yeah,
be
that's
alive.
The biggest thing.
The
yeah.
only thing that they could do with that is to shock them, like, you know, Hope and them. Oh, he's alive as like a double cross. But now they think that they're getting them on their side. Yeah. So there's, I don't see a reason.
There's just like some crazy long con that's been going on every Bardo scene, which would include Levitt being evil.
Right.
It would include Orlando being in on it the whole time. Like, that's the only way it could work. If this whole yeah. Bardo season has been a con.
Also,
it's
we've
be like a plot flip at the end.
We've surrendered a lot of big character screen time to a lot of these new side characters. So yeah. I don't think we have time for another long side view of like Orlando swinging out of the story and then coming back in late. Nope. Like,
yeah, we brought this up before. Like, if they wanted it to be a thing where it made sense that Orlando didn't give them all the information on purpose, like Levitt was saying, oh, like, Dev didn't tell you this, Orlando didn't tell you that, you know, to mess with them while, like, as a con, maybe, but there's just no reason now to bring him back to life
yeah.
or say he's still alive.
Yeah, I agree. And then a little bit after we get that conversation is when we move over to Levitt pulling Anders aside to kind of he says, like, they gave me a new idea, like, let's talk a little bit more in depth.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the one quote, which is just amazing. He just says it so casually when he's talking about Octavia. He says, like, I've seen Octavia kill more people than I've known in my entire life.
Yeah.
It's like, Jesus Christ, that's so true. And then he's like, and Echo and Dioza are nothing to mess with either.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it's just, I feel confident that Levitt's good now. Like, he cares about them and he's trying his best to pave the way for them.
Levitt pulls Anders aside and just says, they don't need the training.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, we need to focus on making sure they understand, like, why we're doing this.
Right.
And I think he says, like, show them what we're all about, our way of life. We don't need to, like, train them.
Exactly.
Yeah. And while this is going on, Octavia's kicking ass.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, and Anders says he wants them to believe and fight for the cause rather than for each other. And that's a huge thing. An overarching theme of the 100 is that our characters do anything and everything. They will move the heavens and the earth to, like, make sure each other survives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what the disciples are
all
about.
Oh, yeah, no, they're complete antithesis.
Yeah. So Anders realizes this and says, that's where we're at. This is where we need to go in terms of where their heads are at.
I'm slowly coming around to Levitt not being a bad guy. Slowly.
All right, quick question for you guys, though, because why did we spend a scene earlier in this season, that one of Bellamy's only two or three scenes of the entire season, on the Ark or the Ring?
Right.
It wasn't the Ark. What was
it
called?
Was when they're in space in the Ring. Yeah.
Whatever it's called. Like, they're having the conversation and then, like, Bellamy tells Echo that her weakness is loyalty. But it feels like that gets so undermined with Echo just so easily jumping into the disciple mindset. Is it because Bellamy is dead that this catalyst happened?
Bingo. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's where her loyalties were. She was never what's her relation to Hope? She tried to kill Octavia before, and I guess they've all reconciled and become like allies, but her loyalty was to Bellamy. Correct me if I'm wrong.
And let's not say, like, I literally said, and I think Luke agreed a couple episodes ago, that the Octavia and Echo scene was just not what we wanted. And
right.
it was
awkward.
Very awkward. And yeah, 100%. So I agree with what you're saying. You know, Bellamy's gone. She can have loyalty, but now it's probably going to be to the wrong side.
Or to the right side. We don't even know where Bardo stands in the grand scheme. They have to be bad guys, but
they make some good points.
We don't know.
If they didn't have Bill with them, there would be way more
door
that said that they could be good, you know?
We'll probably talk about that
Bill
a little later.
And his desire for the Judgment Day wasn't a thing because of last episode, I would literally have walked away from this episode being like, there's a chance that
100%.
It's Bardo going to be versus Shade Hater, like Bardo and Squad versus Shade Hater. But now I'm getting back to, I don't know how that's all going to fit,
right,
and what's going to get resolved first. And
I mean, they've made Shade, and we'll get into this later, but they made Shade Hater so strong now with J.R. Bourne and at the end of this episode that we don't want to just brush him off anymore. I mean, I thought I read before the season started that the Sanctum stuff would be done early and we would just be full on anomaly and that's it. Well, obviously it's 9 episodes in and we're doing a lot of Shade Hater stuff on the side. Well, now he's getting stronger and stronger.
Real quick, though, I thought you did say when we talked about it before that they didn't say we'd get wrapped up quickly, but I thought they said that they weren't going to spend, like, a lot of time there, meaning, like, it would be spread out.
I thought I read that it was just, like, brush it off, get it out of the way, and then Anomaly is endgame. That's what I, like, okay. And Anomaly still is endgame, but, like, I just thought Shade Hater would be gone by now.
Because I'm at the point where if Shade Hater's gone next episode, I'm pissed.
Oh, I agree. Like, now you can't do that.
Now you can't. It's too far gone. Like, he needs to play a part, if not in the climax of the pre, you know, like the penultimate.
Yeah. Right.
Well, all the Sanctum conflict is kind of coming to a head. We're kind of wiping out factions.
Nobody's been wiped out, though.
I mean, I guess, better way, we're consolidating factions.
Well, the Faithful...
Faithful.
I mean, let's talk about, I guess we'll talk about that later, but Trey was not there.
Wow.
Good point.
Trey's still there around, but you know, whatever. We'll get into that later.
Why don't you say all my homies hate Trey?
All my homies do hate Trey. I can't think of a single person that likes Trey.
We go from loving to hating Gabriel, but our hatred for Trey is always going to remain. So we got off on a little tangent here, but to bring it back to Bardo, the next scene is starting the fear simulations, which I thought was kind of a cool idea. I mean, they're so technologically advanced, it makes sense that they would be able to do this. But the first one we see is it's Dioza, and it looks like they're back on the Skyring log cabin. And Anders comes in. There was it looked like a grounder.
Yeah, I had written down it was grounder.
Children of Gabriel, it kind of looked more like that.
Yeah, wearing a mask.
Dioza would know them, not what a grounder looked like. But anyway, something like that comes in, tries to take a baby Hope, and then Anders comes in and just takes baby Hope and says she'll be watched, not by two eyes, but by thousands. Essentially saying, we're taking your baby Hope to become a disciple. And Dioza reacts to that negatively, yes?
Yeah, we don't need to there's not too much to take away from this except to just know that they're conditioning them.
Right,
and they're just saying, like, you know, equate the society of humanity on Bardo as over individual needs. And that's pretty much, you know, she fails. Like, she wakes up right after this scene, you know.
And he gives her the punishment.
Gives her the rundown a little bit.
Mm-hmm. He tells them that if they fail, they'll be sent to penance one by one. Right.
Grow old and die. Alone. Yeah. So I suggest you commit to the training or you'll lose your sanity and your life.
And that's just a savage threat.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Well, they hold all the cards.
It's literally 2 days for them is 10 years for you. So it's like, Jesus, man. Like,
in
that's
their
a
defense,
real threat.
They are giving them a pretty long leash, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's I keep going back.
Making some good points.
I think I said it in the
last
episode.
It's just Bill, like, man. It really is. Like,
and he hasn't even done anything yet that's made us
the only thing that he's done is, I guess, last episode or the end of the two episodes ago, he tells Clark straight up, you think I burned Becca, kind of lying,
you know
trying to spin it when we know he did, unless the prequel was some kind of wrong version
I would hate that.
It can't be. He definitely did it, and he's trying to spin it.
Yeah.
It wasn't me that burned her. It was my son, Reese.
Technically.
He does the whole, is that what you heard? Like, is that what you think?
Yeah. You know? Which I thought you were right. I thought they were going to spin it in a way where he didn't do that, but he totally did.
He did,
anyway.
Yeah.
But, all right, so this next scene is wild.
Birthing chamber.
This is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we just, after, it pretty much just skips over to, like, a little bit of a lab. You can tell it's in Bardo. You see all this technology around, and right away you could just see all these little, like,
fetuses.
These fetuses being grown in these clear tubes, just just floating there. And dude, it was wild just hearing them start going into the details of, like, you know, this is how the society on Bardo works. Like, this is how we've been doing it for 1,000 years since the Shepherd brought us over here. And
Levitt had the best quote. He said, the fact that you gestated in your mother's body is equally as strange to us as the way that we're doing it. Like, what you're seeing here is...
What a quote. That's such a good quote.
It's just infinitely more efficient. Anders follows it up by saying, like, we're not, like, no one gets laid up for 9 months, like, just holding a baby inside of them. And Dioza kind of quips at Hope, like, you kind of messed my kidneys up. Yeah.
There's no negative effects on the woman or the child. They can detect birth defects early on and monitor them. And they said they can even fix them.
Yeah.
It's just like
it's perfect
the way
population
they did
control.
It's like, you know what? I could be about this.
I mean, I wasn't expecting this at all, but it makes so much sense.
The back, like the lore around the disciples just got so much better this episode. And, you know, like the bottom line was the whole point that they didn't want selfish bonds between the parents and children because you need to put humanity over your own individual needs.
Yeah, like right. This was 100% aimed at Dioza. Be like Octavia, Hope, and Echo can like think about it and like, okay, this kind of makes sense. But I feel like this specific performance is definitely drilled right at Dioza. And she plays along perfectly at the end, whether she means to, whether she's like trying to just go along with the game or she actually agrees when she says, like, you know, like they don't have any parents. And then Anders, again, for the second time this episode, counters with, you know, everyone is their parent. And then Dioza says, so they don't get selfish bonds. And Anders is like, exactly.
So do you think that this was like a politically crafted ploy, or was this part of Levitt convincing Anders to show him their way of life? Because I think it's the second one.
I think it's the latter. Yeah. He understands. They don't need training.
Like what you're saying, that they're aimed at Dioza. I think it was more just to be literally show them everything, see where their mindset is.
I don't know. I still think it's calculated a lot towards Dioza.
Again, that plays into the long
con. I mean, because we just saw, we only see Dioza's fear simulator, right? And it's all about the baby and sacrificing your baby to be a part of the collective. Yeah, so, and this is the same exact thing again. And she answers a lot differently than she did in the fear simulator.
Another cool thing too is he said, I forget the number, but 25. He said, we have 25, one for each disciple that you and your friends have killed.
Right.
And Octavia says, well, if you can just churn fetuses out like this, why not just craft yourself a perfect army? And he said limited resources. So even the disciples, as technologically advanced as they are still fighting an uphill battle. They only have so many people.
Thomas Malthus is fist pumping in his grave right now.
Thomas Malthus.
Yeah, a little social science joke for you there.
A little Thai music for you.
Speaking of social science, moving on to the classroom next.
Yeah, so next preschool.
Scene. And this scene, I have a major complaint about Hope, but basically we do get a cool line before Anders is just, it paves over to Anders talking to a group of new children seeming in like a classroom with our whole, what did you call them earlier? Our, the group of girls, the Bardo girls.
Levitt's Angels.
Bardo girls.
Yeah. Levitt's Angels are in the back.
Levitt's Angels?
Yes.
Yeah, Levitt's Angels.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
I've been waiting to fucking bring that up and use it. So,
that's amazing. Oh my God. I'm glad you
did. The first thing that he actually asks the students is he's talking about Etheria, which is actually the last planet within the circle
first,
of
no way.
First time they name drop it, I'm pretty sure, except for seeing it on, like, people knew about it and we knew about it, but it's the first name drop. Yep.
So what they say, we don't get much about it, but what they do say is the mountain was very tall and very scary, but the shepherd was brave and wise. So nothing basically, but a lot of people think that if this planet's going to be introduced, it could be where Bellamy is or like where he was sent potentially. Right.
And there was a rumor, people thinking that the white light could have sent them to Etheria, which we all would agree that white light is different than green. It's not that kind of travel. So, but I mean, we can totally cross that off now. But I mean, I was reading it on like the Reddit and different things, and people thought that might be where
Because they know about Etheria, right? Okay, yes. Yeah.
This is kind of gets a little gears turning when we have been discussing a little earlier of like how many times has Bill been woken up? Like, is this when they just woke him up? Is that the first time he's been woken since he went to sleep?
It couldn't be because the first thing he said was
you again.
Okay, good point.
Recognizing I'm just thinking
like,
it could
did,
be like the
did
third
they first?
Time,
yeah, did they first land on this planet with the mountain? Have they traveled there like after they landed? I'm just I guess a little curious.
Yeah, I don't like. It's crazy too because like. The making of the babies or whatever wouldn't be a technology that they had at that time for the shepherd or Bill.
Yeah, no. I feel like neither would cryo.
And they say that it was the shepherd's idea, so I don't know if he just gave them his values and they figured it out themselves or if he's been awoken certain times throughout the 1,000 years or whatever it is.
Yeah, it definitely was an attack on Earth because they said we just hit, 11 billion people in the back of the pilot.
Yeah.
I think that what you were asking is if Bill has been basically instilling his teachings into the people. I think he set up like a hard stop in the beginning and put it in motion. And then, you know, like they probably praised him being in the cryo chamber so much. Like literally Anders treated him like a god. Like he probably had that instilled in the right people to the point where it was religion.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense that if you're just going through a wormhole into a place where you have no idea what's good, it's probably like, hey guys, like chill with the fucking until we figure out what's going on here.
Yeah, right. And can you imagine just being frozen for that many years and just assuming that everyone's still going to follow you? You're going to wake up and everyone's like, you're my boy. You're still the shepherd.
And also, out. Like, all the people that came from Earth knew nothing about the way they got there, really, besides the method of the portal. Like, we saw that. Like, they probably knew nothing about... So they just attribute, he's the one that made this happen impossible. Yeah. So like,
that's it literally scumbag. Becomes, yeah. Like saying, he sauntered right up and just went boop, boop, boop.
He just
boop,
took
boop.
It to a new level and probably solidified his reputation so hard in the first generation that it set the standard of their way of life.
Yeah. And then now, I mean, these kids are 100% in.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, look at the culture that he's instilled. That they get them to buy in really young. I mean, this was a preschool that they're in, but. The other part of the school scene that we get is, you know, just emphasizing keep your emotions under control or they're going to control you. And then Anders leads them in a breathing exercise. The shepherd brings us calm. The shepherd brings us wisdom. The shepherd brings us love for all mankind. And that's really all we get. It's just emphasizing this, keep your emotions under control. You got to have a straight face when you're a disciple.
This was honestly a little uncomfortable to watch. After the backdoor pilot episode, mm-hmm. seeing that they're have these little kids praising Bill in this way, when what we've seen from Bill is just kind of, he's a cocksmack.
Right. Yes, he really is.
Yeah. I mean, like what we see from him is that like he just wants to be this savior more than he has, you know, I guess you could say like the correct tools or the correct right. personality to be a savior. And now all these generations removed, these people are just chanting his name basically.
Yeah, and this is, Luke, where you're saying, you know, with Hope, you know, she's appalled. She's pretty much like, this is major brainwashing.
And she should have, yeah, it's just the way she did it, though. Like, she didn't, did she really have to act out closing her eyes? Like, that was what was too much for her to do to buy her another day of unsuspicion. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you're just raising these flags. Andrews is
she takes another L,
It's like, come on, Hope.
Yeah, and then, you know, when Hope says the brainwashing thing, Echo says that these kids, meaning the ones that were in front of them, had it better than she ever did. So that's like the first hint that she's totally buying in.
And
we're starting to buy in,
sense. And the more I think about the fact that they have to, we have to assume that they think Bellamy's dead, like it makes her personality a little bit more malleable.
Yeah.
But it's just weird. I mean, she's been so stubborn in her own way, like... In a way, I respected it about her personality, and it feels like she just kind of jumping ship because of Bellamy. But we keep talking.
I mean, her loyalty to Bardo could be the weakness at the end of the season.
I guess.
I mean, and I don't want to jump ahead, but Hope literally says to her, "You're just looking for someone new to follow." And I mean, Echo's a warrior.
That's like the next scene. Yeah.
There's nothing else really that comes from the scene.
Levitt's angels are just in their holding cell, I guess. The only talking points that come out of this one is they all essentially sit Hope down and are just like, girl, you got to get it under control. Like, you are just acting up way too much. This is not the time or place for doing it. And I want to comment on that. Like, look at the other characters. They have all been, like, they're all seasoned warriors. They've been in circumstances where they've had to keep their cool.
Yep.
Hope has never done that. She has only been a kid alone on Beta for her entire life. She has not had this, and she almost slipped up by trying to assassinate
Anders
in episode Welcome to Bardo, and Echo had to run through a crowd, chase her down, and be like, are you out of your fucking mind, Hope? Like,
I guess the hints of her being unstable and not calculated and irrational was early, and I forgot about that.
I mean, Dioza beats the shit out of her, basically, in
literally,
that episode.
Even the scene where Dioza's like, listen, because Hope wanted them to just walk in the room, attack, who cares what happens. Dio's like, we need to figure this shit out.
I genuinely believe she's just not experienced. Like, look at what Octavia's been through. Look at what Dio's has been through. Look at what, like,
She thinks she can just punch her way at everything.
They just immediately know the stakes and understand that they just gotta play the game right, and Hope is... I keep going back
to that's the vibe you get from Octavia and Dioza, because like you're saying, Jimmy, like, Echo's dropping more permanent
hints that she's actually bought in.
Yeah,
and like, Hope's 25 years old ish, you know, but she's not 25 years old wisdom and experience wise. You know, she doesn't have any kind of, like you said, experience or wisdom. Most of her life has just been sitting on a planet either by herself with two people, one person.
Yeah,
you know. So it makes sense that she's a little crazy.
So, moving on in Bardo, anything else on that scene in the cell?
No, man. Next thing is training session part 2.
Yeah, and they're in the armory. It's Levitt and his angels in the armory. I just love saying
we're going to keep using that. Yeah. It's amazing.
So, and right away, Octavia's getting fitted for these, like, cybernetic gloves that operate based on muscle contractions. Levitt's just saying, in time, you guys are going to be able to use all of this dope weaponry.
Yeah. He says something to Octavia, like, it's not as cool as a sword, but...
Yeah, you know, yeah, like, beast. So no, no, not a beast. Not a beast.
Give me some high...
not a beast!
Give me a high-tech sword to go with Octavia's character, man.
Oh, true. She has, like, an electric sword, like yes. Sasuke uses in Naruto. That'd be pretty sick.
Yeah, they do.
That's the one I actually thought at first.
Yeah, like, that thin blade that's the same width as, like, the hilt.
Yeah, they do a 360, and I think it was Echo maybe asked, like, are we going to get to use some of those? And it's just, like, the walls are lined with guns and, like, every weapon.
Hope takes a liking to the flamethrower.
Yeah, specifically the flamethrower. And then there's a closed door with a biohazard.
That's where we get the important line that Levitt says to Hope. Like, I think it's Hope that says, like, why do you need these flamethrowers? And Levitt chirps back saying, we don't know what we're fighting. We don't know what – this is what spawned our whole conversation earlier was this exact quote saying, like, we don't know what killed the first Barbarians.
We need to be ready for anything.
Yeah. And this is the whole thing. Like, are they really about to introduce a new species? Because, like, that sounds like such a big undertaking.
Yeah, please, Jason, don't do it.
But if they're not, then, like, what is happening? Like, is all of this a play just to get to literally brainwash their core just to get Clark?
So let me ask you a question, you know, a little bit. I mean, you asked a question, I'm going to ask you one right back. So in a second, like in a little bit in the scene, they show the door that has the warning sign on it saying biohazard. And they say, this is Gem 9. This is the substance that wiped out the planet. Mm-hmm. Are you fully in right now, all of you guys, that they were wiped out before the Shepherd showed up? Or would you be open to the fact that they did that to the planet? Part of a plan.
If that's the whole big thing, you know, like I keep saying, the long con, like if this was all like some misconstrued plan, that's a good part of it, is that that would be a lie. That would have had to be a lie, because then that just explains away there is no third species. It was us that killed them and took over the planet, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
for that.
But I mean, I guess that could also play into like the Bardoans' final war was against mankind. Then mankind will eventually have to fight their final war. But at the same time, it's like the whole, like the climate of the planet is ruined. Do you think that they had the power to do that?
We don't know that it was ruined by them. It could have just been an uninhabitable planet that just had these chemicals in the atmosphere. It was prone to lightning. And they just have to
disciples
live underground.
Maybe they
didn't cause it, but they just are saying that
potentially because it was they said that the structures were built there before the magic wand that they used to read the code was there before all this technology. So
yeah, that's a good point.
Because you could think about it like this: if you can only live underground, there's even more limited resources between two species. One of you is gonna go.
Yeah,
that could be it, and they won and they pushed them out. But we could be overthinking.
There's only so many episodes left, though.
There could be a third
species.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Like, there could
again, though, yeah, there's only so many episodes left. God damn it. We would need a season 8.
I don't even know how to theorize about this. These are all, like, very viable things. If it were personally up to me, I don't know how there could be an overlap with these 10-foot Bardoans and how humanity would be able to, like, immediately teleport to this unfamiliar planet, understand the situation, and then be able to commit genocide against these technologically advanced giants. I don't buy that. So I don't, unless they had this bioweapon beforehand.
Right.
But I don't think.
Which we didn't see any hints in the prequel.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I don't think this small cult had the facilities to.
Bill's a smooth talker.
I mean, I just wanted to ask the question. I don't really believe it either.
To think about because this is Endgame. This is Endgame.
Yeah.
There's going to be something crazy that happens. So
I am still like, I think that's very viable that it could be a red herring, but I am still thinking there's probably a third entity out there, whether it's a species or something.
I think it's obvious now that it's not a human. It's not a human subspecies because they keep saying like the whole thing, humanity, like humanity's last word. Like they're even including, it's not like the Bardoan, the disciples' last word, because they include Octavia and Echo as saying humanity. So
just, I don't know, for a series finale, like I just can't imagine I would care about some random species showing up to be the big bad with what, 7 episodes left?
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll but, you know, we'll see. Yeah, I mean, they could do it. I mean, they made us love Levitt and Hatch in a couple mm-hmm. episodes, and they can make us hate someone else in a couple, so who knows.
We good on this theorizing?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Levitt also reveals that after years of studying, they've isolated the substance that wiped out the Bardoans. They call it Gem 9, and what little they have would be enough to wipe out everyone on Bardo. So they are packing some serious heat with this bio weapon. And then the next scene is kind of the gun game.
The blindfolded
test. So just context, they're paired up. The shooter is blindfolded, has to hit a bullseye, only being directed by their partner. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, the Angels with some randos.
The Scrubs, the old right. Scrubs.
Are their partners.
Scrubs is ass they kicked.
Echo immediately asks, are these guns lethal? Anders says no. They all take their first shot. Echo just turns her gun to the left, takes out the other Angels, and then hits the bullseye.
Essentially, just, says, it's just more solidification yeah. that she's in.
And Anders is in, too.
Anders says, perfect control. This is how we win.
Yeah.
Echo says, I win.
He knew exactly why she was asking to.
And Levitt's
oh, yeah.
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 Yeah. So that's good. There wasn't really that much.
The only other quick thing that you see in that scene real quick is when Octavia falls, Levitt quickly yes. jumps to her mm-hmm. side. Right. And then there's this quick flash over to Anders mm-hmm. where he notices that they interacted like that. So me and Kathleen were talking right before this episode, and it's like, was that because you think that Anders is saying like, get close to Octavia?
Yeah. He's thinking, sure good job, soldier.
Keep doing this. Or he's saying like, why are you getting close to her? You yeah. know, you're not.
That's
like,
literally like, are you on which side are
yeah,
you on?
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
that's the question.
You on? Because I'm taking it right now as you're not supposed to get close to anyone. He's saying, what's your deal?
From what we know of the way this society is structured, a level 11 should not be pulling that shit. I right. think a level 11 is so far along that the expectation is no, they would not show that kind of emotion. Yeah. So I think it was a negative. Anders is saying, bro,
yeah.
reel it in a
and
little bit.
The more I think about it is also, I don't think they would give someone that type of mission, because the risk of giving someone that type of mission is they break from the collective and yes. actually fall for the person they're supposed to.
Yeah, everyone else is not.
Completely explains the transition to the next scene of, right. which goes right into Levitt going to Octavia's yeah. quarters at the end of the night. And he kind of just walks in. They do their little, you knew what the deal was as
yeah.
soon as this
oh,
happened.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as he took a step in and she went over and closed the door, I was like, all right, this is going down.
He's not wearing the glasses, dude. He's not wearing the glasses. He's ready.
Yeah, he's off the clock.
Yeah, he's off the clock.
He does a little,
work better at keeping emotions under control. You're up best to level 2, he says. Yeah. Something like that. They have an exchange. They bang.
Yeah, I mean, he starts off trying to give her a warning, and she's like, that's not why you're here, bro.
Yeah, she knows.
I said a bang. If it wasn't obvious, bang. If it wasn't obvious
bang.
Yet.
Bang, 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 bang.
Bang, 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 bang.
If it wasn't obvious yet, this scene is what actually, like, words confirms the fact that levels have absolutely nothing to do with your combat ability. So even if you're, like, a high level 11, level 12, like Anders and Levitt, like, you don't have to have a fighting ability, because they already know how strong these three are, and they're saying like yeah. you're only a level 2. So it's clearly just about their whole criteria about how much control you have,
mental fortitude
and love and dedication yeah. to the disciples.
Because
so
we originally thought it was just like you're born, you're level 1, and then you become level 2 and then 3, because it felt like, because yeah. we were thinking like, does everyone have a level?
And they do.
Are all the kindergarten kids one, or were they two?
Yeah, I would guess you're level 1.
Yeah. Well, they were in the same class.
Were they in the room when they were in? No, the training partners were in the room when they were getting promoted coming up, right?
Yeah.
But not the kids, right?
No,
I can't remember. Okay.
Okay.
That would have been funny.
Back to the
that would have been
scene.
Awesome.
Do we get any information before? We get a little bit, right?
Like, well, they deliberately show us
right
the tattoo on
yeah,
the
Kathleen
back.
Wanted us to bring that up, too. They yeah. show her full back with the tattoo. I mean, could just be, showing us a little skin, but
it'll be important.
But
what
yeah,
happens at the end of the
again,
episode.
Again, fully, zooming in on the tattoo with Hope's code.
And I'm a little jumping the gun here, but the reason I think that the writers decided to do that was, or I guess the director decided to do that was, I think we're going to get a couple, maybe even next episode or the episode after, they might reuse her code to pull Hope from penance.
Yeah,
I agree
that
with that.
I guess we'll get back or else, like, it was just, it was a cool throwback, but why waste the time to make
yeah, 100%.
To do that? Because honestly, you really don't get anything out of the scene besides a little bit of that. And like I said, like the level two thing.
I got really a lot out of it.
I mean, yeah, speak for yourself on that one.
We got a hookup. That's a lot.
Dude, people went nuts to have the first sex in, what, two seasons maybe? At least this season. I don't know. Season six?
I guess we see Amori and Murphy a little post-coital.
Yeah. And
I'm always prequel.
Just totally just hitting us with the lines. I love it.
Better than Parks and Rec.
So we good with the sex scene?
Yeah, let's move on, please.
Cool.
So, Kyle's upset.
Last scene, we have our Levitt's Angels, and this is their final test that's been hyping up. Oh, and in the sex scene, Levitt did say, final test is coming up. You have to pass.
Right, that was the warning he starts with.
If you fail this, you know, you're not in. You got to pass this. But yeah, so essentially what this final test we find out is each of the four girls get run through a simulation wherein they are being presented with an escape opportunity, and one of the other, well,
always hope, yeah,
for Hope it is Dioza, for everybody else it is Hope, essentially knocks on their cell door and says, hey, I stole a flamethrower, let's just burn the oxygen.
Hell yeah, brother.
And all of them are kind of questioning it, but are walking along. I think we get it first from the point of view of
Echo.
Yeah, this is what made it more believable than anything else.
Yes, definitely.
I felt, I knew it was a simulation way before.
Yeah, like, yeah,
before
I
they
agree.
Even walked outside, because of the conversation she was having, Echo and Hope were having, was because if that conversation was real, I was, my notes, like, you could see me, I'm losing my mind. I'm like, this is unfucking
stupid. I will not agree with that fully, only because I was in my defense, we had had a commercial break and then a Sanctum scene, and then we dove into this. So I was like, what the hell?
Mean,
I literally wrote down, I can't tell who's crazy and who isn't. Am I crazy?
Yeah, that's by that's by design with that commercial break.
Yeah, oh yeah, perfectly 100%. Done. Yeah.
Oh, I just have simulation question mark is my
Well, the
point.
Second that Echo's, or I guess Hope's simulated version said, like, to Echo, like, oh, we can't go get Dioza and Octavia. Like, they're already in. I was like, okay, well, Echo two scenes ago just said, I'm in.
Right.
And then walked out of the room. I was like, okay, this is fake. This is fake. And then the knife through the neck, I was like, game over.
I had a huge eye roll when Hope was like, we have to save them from themselves. I was like, it's like the most unbelievably ironic and like stupid line.
Someone codes that.
Simulation.
Well, yeah. I guess I should have known at that point.
So as these all play out, Echo, Octavia, and Dioza all kill Hope in the scenario, which is passing the test. So they save all of Bardo at the expense of, you know, someone near and dear to them. But in Hope's simulation, it is Dioza with the flamethrower. And I believe she is trying to stop her until she says, well, what about Gabriel, Octavia, and Echo? To which Dioza says, they're waiting for us at the stone. And then Hope's like,
I bet.
Let's go.
Yeah, I mean, I took it. I took it like she wasn't necessarily trying to stop her. She was kind of just being like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What's the plan here? What are we doing? What's going on? Oh, they're right.
How can I help?
Turn that shit down.
Yeah, Hope's like, just tell me. I'll help you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But with those simulations, like, I mean, I guess we'll start getting into it with, you know, who we think is actually in, who's faking. I would have liked to see if this is the case. Like, I don't believe Dioza or Octavia are in. I believe they're playing their part because they know that this is the part they have to play to survive. Like they've been telling Hope this whole episode. I would have liked, if that's the case, a little bit of a, like, you know, some kind of, like, maybe quick thing where Dioza or Octavia realize it's a simulation, not necessarily like say, oh, this is a simulation, but kind of be like, oh, this seems weird or something. I can't believe, even if she doesn't know it's a simulation, there's no way Dioza puts a freaking knife through Hope's face or
no,
neck.
You're absolutely right. But I think it would have been lazy and too obvious if they put a quip. If they put something in those scenes that were obvious enough for us to pick up on it and talk about it right away, it's like, what the fuck are we doing here? But because at the end they do something so subtle that we're going to talk about it, that I think that was their version of saying confirming exactly what you're saying.
That's true.
And the fact that it was so subtle that we're going to talk about it, it could not be that, you know, which I think is a better decision.
I feel like Octavia, like, Dioza's like, fool me once, like, shame on me, fool me twice, won't get fooled again.
Right.
You know, it's like, I don't think that they were going to get her again. Like,
right.
She was pretty up with the times at this point, was like, I don't think she actually thought she was killing her.
Because I also brought this up, that if Dioza did not know that that was a simulation and killed Hope like that, that was a whole waste of an episode with the backstory, episode two, when we got the whole Octavia and Dioza for 10 years with Hope. It's like, what was the point? You softened her up a little bit. You made her care about something other than herself just to say she would be willing to kill her for Bardo.
Yeah.
3 months of
training.
All it
took was some babies and some jars. 100%.
I think Octavia and Dioza 100% knew they were in simulations. They would never kill Hope.
Yeah. Right. Also, Octavia's, like, the way she killed her seemed a little more, like, kind and, like, reluctant than just whipping the knife into her neck.
It is weird. It's very weird, too, that they chose for Echo and Dioza to have the same exact kill sequence, and then Octavia was different, and then the fight is over, and, you know.
Yeah, true. She also did say that.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they made the two of them the same and Octavia different.
Dope kill shot.
Oh my god, yeah, hell yeah.
Throwing the knife.
Throw that knife, baby girl.
But anyway, yeah, so Echo, Dioza, and Octavia all pass. Hope fails, and then we get kind of a graduation scene where Anders says, congratulations, everybody. Echo, you were the star student. So your, you know, reward is you get to choose how we punish Hope. And Echo says...
They're all level twos, by the way, like the whole graduation. It seems like Anders is, well, we've now seen it in two cases. Anytime there's a graduation ceremony between going up a level, he's there. Because the first time we saw it was for the level 9 ceremony, which seemed like a bigger deal, more people, public, versus this one just being like, all right, you guys passed the elementary school.
Also, no roll call at that, because they just saw them in the hallway. It was like, get over here, you scallywags. We're graduating. Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, I just think... Echo is fully built in.
That's what we have to talk about.
Okay, so yeah, so
a lot here. Go ahead, Brian.
Finish your sentence, Brian, where Echo pretty much gives out her punishment, saying
Echo gives Hope 5 years on penance.
Right, we have to break her spirit, she says.
Not immediately. She gets dragged away, and Dioza and Octavia...
She starts freaking out because she realizes it's real. Like, this is something that if this doesn't get resolved on Bardo and within a day, I'm literally losing years off.
And what Luke said, like, that just again makes her more stupid to this episode. Just like she's literally just like fighting back, and now it's real and she's freaking out. You didn't know that? Like,
and honestly, Echo's right. She ain't gonna do it again if she has to spend 5 years in solitude. Like, I'm fine with that.
Directly answering you, Jimmy, is that I think the alone part is what freaked her out, because I think she was like, let's all rebel, let's all go back to penance together over doing this.
That's a good point.
I mean, what did she expects the angels to just break rank and just start beating the shit out of people and Anders to like bust out of there? I mean they've shown it, but she just doesn't think anything through.
So when this happens, we have Dioza and Octavia giving a look.
Subtle look.
Right. I mean, they can't show emotion, but they do give the look
they're shooting her daggers.
Yeah.
That's what we want to talk about. Because
is it obvious that they were shooting her daggers, though?
I would say yes.
To me, yes. So that's the question. Okay. Now, if they're shooting daggers, that means that this whole time that Octavia and Dioza were just playing the part.
Which is good.
That's fine.
Now, no complaints with that.
What would be the reason? There's no plan that would work with Echo saying take center to penance. So I am on the side that she's becoming loyal to the second.
Yeah. Also, I mean, we talked about Echo doesn't know about Octavia's tattoo, does she? So she doesn't know she has a quick escape.
It's not an escape. It's a pool. It's a pool. Hope to you.
Well, yeah. Which would be an escape from penance for Hope.
Oh, for Hope. Yeah.
I mean, Echo, I don't think, is privy to that as a possible plan.
They spent a long time together in the cell.
I guess, it could be off screen.
Could have been shown a little skin off screen.
Echo has
somewhat of like a self-satisfied look on her face.
Let's do the mind of what? You think she's doing a plan? Because let's do
no,
the mind
I think
exercise.
She honestly feels good that Hope got punished and now she's going to spend some time.
I think she's loyal to the disciples.
Let's talk about that for a second. Let's do a quick mind exercise of what it means if Echo actually is saying, Hope, you need a slap on the wrist. I think it's like, I'm ready for her to have the worst death ever. I'm done with her. Like, there's no redeeming her. I don't care if Bellamy comes back and she's like, I'm so sorry. It's like, you just know.
For a quick second, because we've been shitting on Hope, I thought you were talking about Hope. Until you dropped Bellamy and I was like, is he talking about Hope?
I just don't know how Echo's redeemable if this is real. Like, I don't think there's a way, in my opinion.
Maybe she's not.
I think that Hope's thing,
But Lark's going to happen now? Because Echo's going to die, and then Clark and Bellamy are going to bang.
Yeah, I mean, I think that,
I like that.
I think that Hope's thing where she said that Echo's just looking for someone to follow, and the whole thing about her loyalty being a weakness, I think she's a soldier. I think she was loyal to Bellamy, and I mean, they were on penance for 5 years together, but I just honestly think that Echo wants to just forget everything, not have any feelings, buy right into that disciple and, you know, be a part of it, you know, not have to deal with anything else, be a loyal soldier again.
I mean, maybe I just,
I'm not saying I like it.
What's going to happen when Bellamy comes back? It's just like, am I going to accept Echo back into one crew, binge crew? Like, I think it's over.
I mean, if this is true, then the ultimate situation is going to be Echo's on the other side. We hate her. Bellamy shows up. She turns back, like you said. Do we accept her? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that at all.
Yeah, Sith talks in absolutes, Luke. Irredeemable? It's only episode 9, bro. Slow your roll.
Gabriel was almost irredeemable, Luke.
We're kills Bardo's storyline, right?
Yes, we are done with the Bardo storyline. Let's switch gears back to Sanctum, and it's a completely different ballpark over there.
Mickey Bang Bang.
Shit's starting to hit the fan even more. Shit has just been, they've been throwing more shit at the fan in Sanctum. It's amazing. I really like
it. It's actually fun. It just feels fun. Because I care. The reason it's good is because I like Nelson, the leader of the Children of Gabriel. Nikki is, I've warmed up to her as like a character that is causing good stuff, you know, entertaining stuff to happen. Shade Hayda can't get enough praise. You know, he's the man. Indra for Wan Crew. And then we have Knight leading the you know, the no,
Sangata
the banner,
crew.
The men, what is it, the men with no banners or whatever? What's the Game of Thrones thing?
The Brotherhood without banners.
Yeah. They don't know. They're just waiting for the next leader, commander to pop up, which, you know, eventually happens, but.
So, to kick off the Sanctum storyline, we have Nikki Bang Bang at the mic, essentially just saying Russell Lightborn, Daniel Prime, and Raven Reyes, meet us at the palace. You have 20 minutes to do it, otherwise we're going to start killing hostages, starting with Amori / Kaylee Prime.
Yeah, and
that's where we're at.
Yeah, we get a little bit, and then we get, almost a smash cut to Murphy and Jackson drinking in the saloon. Then kind of they hear the announcement.
Yeah, so I want to ask that. That was something that was weird to me. So he's in the room with Shade Hayda, Russ Hayda, whatever you want to call him. He gets his face smashed into the chessboard and says, "Help." And they hear guns.
Great point.
They literally hear guns, and he's saying that there's a plan going on to him. And then Murphy's just like, "Let me just go have a little drink at the saloon."
Well, no, I think he heard the gun. What was we didn't see him barge in.
He knows, but he knows that Kaylee Prime or you know Amori is doing something, and he says the gun, like the guns go off, and he goes, "Oh shit!" And Shade Hayes is like, "All right, now you can go."
Yeah.
Like, why would you run to the guns? Why do you go to the saloon to have a drink with Jackson?
But the second he realized that they had every single person on his side on their knees, surrounded by 30 people with guns, he probably backed off. Found an ally and
we just have a drink, bro.
Yeah, let's just settle down and see what she has to say.
To explain that. It's just, he probably just saw the situation.
Whatever.
But Jackson stops Murphy from being rash and it's just like, slow down. You're just one guy. We can't do anything unless we consolidate our power and figure something out.
I thought it was the opposite because wasn't Jackson saying like we got to rally the troops and do this because doesn't Murphy say like look what we have?
Murphy says the quote is
try to rush
ready to roll and then but then
Murphy is the one that says I'm 150 pounds.
Yeah, he says here's what we're working with.
Yeah,
they have a lot of guns. One crew won't listen to us. I'm 150 pounds wet, and you can't fight to save your life. He just lays it all out, and it's like he's making a good point.
Luckily, though, Indra comes through the door and says, "I'm gone for half a day, and the compound is surrounded with cogs and convicts." By the way, I love that Children of Gabriel is now just the cogs.
Yeah,
I like that they specified the half day because it just highlights so much. Like we're pretty much seeing almost everything that happens on Alpha, like hour by hour, because stuff is happening so slowly compared to everything else. So it's really cool that they dropped that line because, you know.
And weren't we wondering last episode where Andrew was? Or did we know?
Well,
that
she says.
Know,
right.
The first line of the episode tells
Gotcha.
Whatever.
She says she's out looking for the others.
Yeah, and she relays the information. All we found was bodies and blood at Gabriel's camp. None of our people, though. So she just relays, we don't know where they went, but all the bad guys are dead.
Yeah. I feel like that's got to be alarm bells. Like, they killed everyone and didn't come back. But they, obviously, they don't mention that, but I'm just saying.
And essentially, the conclusion they come to is, well, like, Murphy wants to give himself and Russ Hayda to Nikki. Indra does not want to release Shade Hayda at all costs, he says. So... Yeah.
But they wise up and don't they? Oh, maybe
yeah.
The next scene that's is next, going yeah. to see Russ Hayda, which, do we Fantastic. Have anything else?
No, we're good.
No. I just think it's a nice little Murphy quote when Indra's like, he won't just volunteer. And then Murphy goes, then I guess we'll have to persuade the bastard.
The first scene we Murphy's get so in, cool. the next, the first line we get from Russ Hayda is just so good. He's just like chilling, laying on the bed. He's just enjoying everything.
He is.
What does he say? Something like, he's like, ha, so you let 30 people get captured or something like that. And he was just like, the way he delivers his lines, it just feels like he's always in control. He's super calm and he's just confident as fuck.
Yeah. Everything's going according to plan. Somehow. So good, shit's hitting the fan, but it's somehow going according to plan.
I think Indra says, you wanted chaos, you got it. Like, this is what's going on, as if he didn't already know everything. He is so plugged in with what's going on in Sanctum.
Yeah, because he's the one that set Nelson on Nikki's path.
Like, it's Alyssa.
It's just like,
yeah.
But he somehow finesses it that even though he is their 24/7 lockdown prisoner, he says, I won't go freely to Nikki without some conditions. And the three conditions he lays out are, or that he gets from Indra, are protection from the faithful, which obviously Indra goes back on, 20 minutes unguarded per day, which Indra previously took away from him, and someone to play chess with.
So do you think he's playing the strategy game when he says he needs protection from the faithful, knowing that she's going to leave him there to get attacked or killed later?
Well, yeah, he laid out, I think he,
because he made the plan pretty much again.
And he can always bring up, you know, like, I mean, I don't know who's going to, I mean, obviously Sangeetikru is going to believe him, but he can say, like,
as soon as he speaks in their language, like,
yeah, well, he could just bring up, like, Indra promised me protection and she turned her back on me.
Yeah. I think he actually wanted protection from them because he knew the second they found out he wasn't a prime, they were going to react the way they did.
Mm-hmm. Except he just kicks, well, whatever.
He also gives Indra, I guess, a drawing that he found, but the tunnel under the palace that leads to the Great Hall, which I think we knew of from last season. That's where the original Sanctum inhabitants hid from the toxins that make you go crazy. They would hide under the tunnels, right?
Okay.
Is that a thing? So we knew that was a thing.
But... Yeah, because remember the first, when they get to Sanctum, no one's around because they have to start tying themselves up.
And they come out, right.
Wow. That's
I actually didn't catch that.
Good catch.
And then, yeah, this is what leads me to believe that Russ is on their side, even though he says it kind of sarcastically. But the ending of this scene is Russ saying, this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
He says, and then right before that, he said, like, yeah, I found something that might help us. Like, he starts putting him as a collective.
He's spinning the whole thing.
Sniffs it out, too. Indra knows what Shade Hayda is and is never, ever, ever, ever going to trust him, no matter what he says. Yeah. It's
this
a non-starter.
Is literally a plan that's been going on that he created in the last couple hours or whatever.
It's only been like 3 days for him. And it's
so literally everything that started from, you know, I guess, you know, Nelson, right? That would be the first piece to get Nelson and Nikki together. And then going through to get Kaylee to do her, what is it, reunification ceremony? Having Murphy not show up, having Nikki take over, and now he's going to show up, you know, because that's what she wants. She wants Russell. And then, you know, what we get to next.
This might be a hot take, but if they end Russell's arc the right way, we're going to look back on this season and say he was by far the best written part of the entire season.
Very possible.
I agree.
He already is.
Carried probably by the acting itself, but like also like the writers and the dialogue, which J.R. Bourne perfects them. He doesn't get to make them. Like, it's still like we're praising him, but like the lines he's giving and the way
some of them could be portrays his,
for sure.
But Alyssa like, can show you the way.
The writers too, because his character just escalated. Like Jason put him on a pedestal, at least as a fan.
It's impressive, especially since we all kind of were all like, oh, Shade Hayda last season. We love when he's on
the screen. It's a crazy thing to have documented too, because it's like I've never felt that way about a character and been able to look back on it, but we shit on him all over the beginning of the first episode. And it was like episode three.
Just more kudos to J.R. Bourne. I mean, he was a completely different character last season.
Yeah. So before we go to the next sanctum scene, I do just love when he's asking for someone to play chess with, he looks at Indra and says, perhaps you're more formidable of an opponent. Indra just says, I don't play games. Ooh, I just love me some Indra.
She's playing a game right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but Russ 8 is winning this game.
Yeah, definitely.
He is.
So the next one is Murphy and Russ arriving at the Great Hall to Nikki Bang Bang. Anybody?
So she is, initially, she's, well, since this is her whole story now, she's pissed that Raven isn't there.
Right.
So she basically is. Does Murphy step up?
They straight up lie and they say Raven's at the second compound. She'll be back soon. Nikki's like, nah, not happening. And then she says, all right, well, not right away, but she says, all right, Amori's going to take the place, you know, because Murphy and Russ step right up because they're already part of it.
Yeah, because Murphy steps up and says, looks at everybody, I'm not Daniel Lee. And then,
well, that, yeah, because
Jer is in the back of the room pissed off because he's like, no way,
Jer, our fucking boy, Jer, dude.
I loved
that.
Yeah. Like, no way. Yeah, he was pissed.
I wanted to tweet that in our live tweet last night. Jer's just not having it,
dude. His whole world's crashing down right now.
And then, yeah, I mean, this is Nelson getting what he wants, I guess, because he knows the whole deal, but. That, you know, him joining Nikki, he says to Murphy, all right, tell them your truth, you know, let them know, see how they act.
So Murphy, yeah.
So and then Amori steps up next, Murphy says.
Yeah, the place starts going cray. Reveal.
Yeah.
And then Russell says it, but way cooler.
Yeah, he saunters up.
He says.
He's got a piano, dark piano motif in the background, though, so you know he's evil.
Russell had all you convinced that he was a god. If he was really a god, why was it so easy for me to kill him and take his body? I am not Russell Lightborn. I wear his body as my host. That's
amazing.
Yeah. A legend.
He probably, I mean, this is like the first time he's been really in the spotlight in a minute. I mean, he walks into the tent, the building, whatever, when he says, saves Murphy,
right?
But this time, I mean, he's on a stage and he is savoring every second
he's in
of
his
it.
Element.
Yeah,
I mean, him versus Bill in front of a crowd, dude.
True. Good point. I mean, I'm honestly cool if those are the factions. Yeah,
that could be the war. It could be those two factions. But I don't know. Are we all on Bardo? I guess.
I don't know. No, I would like to see a little Russ 8 action on Bardo. I'm okay with that.
Imagine the main characters are split on sides. That would be insane.
I've got to tell you, I don't think the people at Sanctum have the facilities to take out Shade Hate. No,
I don't think you have the facilities
but like,
for
who
that.
Who else do they
gun.
Got? They have none of the A team there.
Yeah,
there's going to be a collision with Shade Hate and some of the OG characters like Clark and all them.
Is there anyone left on Sanctum right now that knows about the anomaly? Like that, nobody even knows where anybody is on Clark's side, right? Because
Maddie. Doesn't really know, but she's the only one who
because,
has somewhat of
I mean,
inkling.
The only thing I could think of with Shade Hate is that he figures out something about the anomaly and he wants to use that to be even bigger as, you know, like even...
Well, anything Maddie knows about the anomaly, Shade Hate knows about the anomaly because he had the flame. So, like, it's true. In
I mean,
head.
Yeah, he could also be having the same visions that she is.
Absolutely, why not?
Because do you think... I don't know if we've talked about this before. Are the symptoms, are the visions, rather, a symptom of it getting ripped out of her head?
That's what we're
because
still,
it happened think, to both of them.
The thing is that we don't have a sample size. You die.
Yeah, there's no way to know.
You take it out after you die, and the only people that have like it, even Shade hated that happened to, but like now he's back. Yeah. We don't.
That could be an explanation.
Yeah, this is just all
if Shade hated does theory. Know about it.
Yeah, all theorizing, but like how if you're looking at and we have 7 episodes, so who knows? But you're looking at the Sanctum story. You're looking at the Bardo story. What would make either side go back to any other side? Like, why would the Bardo people go, like, meeting Clark and them go back to Sanctum with all the shit they got going on over there? And why would the Sanctum people go to Bardo if they don't even know what's going on in Bardo? So, like, how are they going to collide?
There's no reason for the people of Sanctum to ever go to Bardo except for the only reason would be is if they were united under one person that wanted to help Clark and them.
Right.
That's the only reason they would leave there because Bardo's less inhabitable. And if they're not going to help the main characters that are there, there's no reason at all.
All right, yeah. So then we're sitting there, and Nikki's going a little crazy again. And Murphy, she's counting. She's saying, tick tock, tick tock. She's counting down the clock, how much time's left. She's saying she wants Raven. Murphy's trying to stall her a little bit, and he says that it was his idea to send Hatch in. It wasn't hers. And, you know, Nikki's not really buying that. but they're just trying to buy time for Indra and them, and they're taking forever to show up. I mean, if this was a plan, I mean, even Murphy, I think, says it to, doesn't he say to Shade Hater before Shade Hater even comes out, saying, like, where's Indra? Or somebody says, where's Indra? Like, in, like offhand.
I didn't catch that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense then that Murphy then starts to stall. Yeah, like, I mean, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, they're stalling. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that Hatch keeps getting name dropped even like several episodes later. But yeah, he's essentially saying killing all these people would just be like spitting on Hatch's good work. Like, even though he died, he did save all of Sanctum with his death. So don't ruin that with more death. It's not necessary. Yeah. And it's all just stallball is what he's playing right now. Luckily, Indra eventually arrives, defuses the situation, gets all of the convicts that had guns to drop their guns and get on the knees. So... And then Russ Hayda saunters over to Indra and says, my plan worked perfectly. Mm. Indra says, so far it did. Which brings us to our next scene. We are still in the Great Hall. Alyssa is kind of talking to Russ Hayda and sneaks him the key to his handcuffs. So stuff just starts happening here.
Which
the faithful are starting to question the Primes now that this information is out. They're starting to get this mob mentality of they're starting to get angry at them, and it's coming to a head where Amori says, hey Murphy, it's time for us to dip and let's just leave Russ in here.
Indra's leaving them to die in there, you know. I mean, you want to get into how stupid of a plan that
is?
Yeah,
I was just like, okay, she's putting way too much faith in them.
It was initially, I wrote down, like, it was both badass and dumb as shit, because it was badass, like, she's like, kill him, basically, like, I'm killing this demon, she's walking away. But dumb as shit for the exact reason. It's like, why not just stand at the end of that door, wait until the yelling's done, and if it's not resolved in the way you would think, fix it the normal way. Because if she did do that, she would have had no issue killing him because the faithful were dead. That was the only reason she was keeping him alive before. So it's like, solve both issues.
She just had to stand on the other side of the door with a pistol that had one bullet.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And that's also make sure get Knight the hell out of there.
Yeah,
there were so many.
So true.
I think this was really, everything was too perfect that Russ, none of this should have happened. Indra's way smarter than that.
I think
this is lazy writing. They just had to get Russ Hayda unleashed.
Yeah. At the end of the episode, I was a little sad because fangirling, gushing over Indra being the commander, and then she just kind of fumbled in the bag a little bit.
First day as commander.
Knight was there. You're right. Like, that shouldn't, that should have been a red flag for Indra anyway, saying like, don't keep him anywhere near Shade Hayda. He doesn't know it's Shade Hayda yet, but if he finds out, he already expressed interest of flipping sides. And it's...
I also love how before Russ gives his speech, before he kills them all, he gets the key from Alyssa, but he just rips the things off anyway, the shackles off anyway. He didn't need a key, dude. He's just like, rips it off.
Dude, he's awesome.
Takes the sling off.
Moving past the negatives, there's a lot of positives from this scene.
Indra leaves the room, and Russ moves over to this kind of a trident-looking candle holder. And he goes on this monologue where he says, what is a king without subjects? But I ask, what are subjects without a king? They are but lost sheep, confused and scared, needing guidance and protection from the wolf, who delights in their slaughter. At which point he takes off the candle to reveal just spikes.
Right.
So he has this trident, and then it cuts to outside of the room. They start hearing screaming.
Real quick, though, I thought that he was going to use that to kill the guards at the door. That was my initial thought. I didn't think all these people are dead. That was my initial
thought.
They're
all dead.
I took it like he was going to kill them, man.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I saw the trident got a little worried because, you know, we've seen Spartacus, and the trident doesn't really work out too well.
Well, it's just like when he started saying, what's sheep without their king? I thought he was saying, like, I'm going to be your king regardless if I'm prime or not. But
I literally took it like this was his plan, kills them. The faithful's gone. Now there is no leverage. He just becomes the Dark Commander again because there's no other angry mob to start a problem. But let's talk about the fact that Trey was not present.
Dumb. I don't like that.
The one person we're ready to have die.
Yeah, true. No, they all get murdered.
I was cool with Alyssa eating it because she sucked. Yeah.
But Trey was not present.
She did eat it, right? She was confirmed dead?
Yeah, so that was the other thing. Did you guys always believe, like, I guess you always believed that she was following him as Russ, right? Like, she never knew he's Shade Hayes. She just said, you're Russ, I'm following you, I'm the faithful. Okay.
I mean, she has that dumb line where she's like, why is everyone, like, not believing you? And he's like, no one's as faithful as you.
Yeah.
I was like, whatever. So she's just a dumb.
All the faithful suck. Right. They're the worst.
Except for Jer.
Except for Jer. I like Jer.
Except for Jer.
Jer's a good man.
Jer made it out of the room, we think.
All right, so Murphy realizes as he's walking away, Indra's already gone, which is the key part of this. She's not around to stop this order. He's like, hold on. Like, all this experience, this chess thing that he's been experiencing with Shade, all this is like telling him, is like, this is exactly what he fucking wants. So he turns around, tries to reverse course. Indra's gone. She can't help him. And Knight and the other one crew members that are guarding the door are not, they're not budging at all. And
Murphy's literally saying, those are screams of multiple people, not one person. Something bad's happening.
If they were killing him, we'd hear him scream. It would be over everyone screaming right now.
Which is exactly when he drops the line saying Shade Hate is killing them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Knight steps up and's like, wait, what did you just say? And then, you know, thankfully we didn't get dialogue wasted on that shit.
Well, yeah, at that point, I guess it's Knight that opens the door. And then we hear him through the door say something.
Open the door. He literally says open the door.
Open the door and Grounder speak.
Whoa, Trigata slang.
Trigata slang. You're right. I was the one that was a stickler for that. And he says, my fight is just beginning. And then Knight and another girl who assumedly is from Sangeeta crew kneel to him, and Shade Hate is back.
Yeah, we're fucked.
Shade Hate is
Shade
back.
Hate is standing there with all the blood on him. J.R. Borm, freaking badass.
Question awesome. Though, would they have reacted the way, like taking quick knees, the one crew members that were there, including Knight, if Murphy didn't say that?
No,
they didn't know it was.
Ooh, I mean, first of all, he spoke in Trigata slang, so there would be questioning something.
Yeah.
I guess it's the whole thing with the Sangeeta crew and Shade Hayda. I guess that's why they definitely knelt. But I mean, his plan right away was to. I mean, I think part of the plan was to speak in the trig. I don't think he was counting on Murphy to be like,
Hey,
I'm Shade Hayda.
Also. I mean, this could be, I hope it's not a similar issue with what we talked about with Murphy just being in the saloon randomly afterwards, because, I mean, they're still outnumbered. And I know it's, like, there's, what, two people kneeled in Shade Hayda. Mm-hmm. Other people are there with guns and Murphy that didn't kneel.
I mean, I think it's safe to say, though, as soon as Shade Hayda is out in the open more so, the whole one crew, or, all of them are going to
put a bullet in his head.
Oh, yeah, they should.
Yeah. Maybe Murphy will. Maybe that'll be the dramatic opening to the next episode.
Yeah, besides Trey missing from that I didn't have too much complaining about that scene. I thought it was pretty badass, like quick work. J.R. Bourne looking badass with blood all over his face. Like, of course he's probably the best fighter we've ever seen. Like, it's starting to feel like that with the shackles in terms of strength, with the skill with weapons, what we've seen him do. It's like I almost want to say he's the best fighter now.
I would. I mean, I married him when you asked.
Yeah, I definitely.
I mean, 30-1 is.
Yeah.
In close quarters is. Did I just make the number up 30?
No, I don't. I think
that was from someone earlier in the episode said. J.R. Bourne said, have 30 people captured in the Great Hall, something like that.
Oh, okay.
So
30.
Okay. So now we have Indra, Jackson, Maddie, Murphy, and Amori versus Shade Hayda.
Yes. And I guess Nikki could serve as a ally in the long term if they want to bring her back. And Nikki and Nelson. Yeah.
I feel like I'm leaning more towards their Russ Hayda.
I think they're Russ Hayda too.
Yeah. You're right.
And I guess this can't be answered right now, but still, where the hell's Gaia?
With Bellamy. 100%.
So you think that Bellamy was the disciple that
she was mentioned in this
She
episode,
was. Yeah.
Cause
she's with that random person that there's no other characters that would really be explainable.
That can't be a random person now. We're too deep in
it. It has to be Bellamy.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Yeah. So I think it's – I feel confident about that.
Yeah.
I guess.
The last time we talked about it, I feel like we joked about it.
We did because it just happened.
Yeah,
we didn't know
but now
more
it's,
episodes were going to pass with him doing nothing.
It's the same thing with
Speaking of which, let's drop the Cadogan theory.
Do
you want to drop that fact you told me before this podcast without the number of episodes of main characters? It's ridiculous to think about that, how little we're seeing our main characters here.
Before this seventh season – Clark Griffin, had appeared in 83 out of 84 episodes. So far in this season alone, she's been absent for 3. And we know that the one she has been in, besides the first, one is very minimal.
Second, yeah. Last episode, she had 5 lines.
Crazy.
I don't like it because
I'm
now
starting to just need more Clark and Bellamy. Like, it's not even a desire. I kind of need that because they are what this show is. And while we've given nods to the ensemble, like, it's their story at the end of the day. Like, I need more Clark in this show.
Like, what are we going to, if Bellamy isn't like a main part of the climax of next episode and then on, it's like, I'm at the point where it's like, I don't even care. Like, what is he going to do for me now? They're going to throw him in a hero role to save the day on Bardo at last second, making me be like, oh my God, Bellamy, love you again. It's like, I don't.
Yeah. And the last time we'll ever see him.
It's a shame that this is, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I don't know if I'd be enjoying it anymore with Clark and Bellamy being in it. Like, I think that I'm thoroughly enjoying everyone else, but I think that when it comes to making sense and overall, like, as a season being the series finale, it's hurting without Clark and
it
Bellamy,
hurts, right, you know? Exactly what you're saying. It hurts more because this is the series finale,
right?
It's like we get no real end closure time with our main characters. Yeah. Which,
right, it's not the entertainment factor, but it's the, like, making sense factor. Yeah. Like,
it's been a great season.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've loved this season.
We're on a break, right?
Yeah, there's going to be three weeks. I think it's either 2 or 3 between now and the next episode.
Damn, I thought it was like 1 week.
All right, so I guess for our last segment, let's just jump right into our Bang Kill Marry segment. So what we're going to do for this is we're going to just do Levitt's Angels. We're going to Bang Kill Marry between Octavia, Hope, and Echo. We can, you know, this, we've talked about these characters so much, we can keep this one a little bit short. So
yeah. I'll go first.
Go ahead.
Keep it simple. Everybody knows who I'm going to marry, my girl Octavia. I'm going to then bang Echo and kill Hope.
Why are you going to kill Hope?
Well, she's a virgin.
Oh,
and she's very emotional. So there you go.
Well, I'm going to definitely marry Octavia as well. I think I'm going to marry Hope. Or I'm bang Hope, I'm sorry. And kill Echo, and my reasoning would be because Echo's going a little cray right now. I don't want her to, I mean, if I can kill her, I'll try. She might kill me, but.
That's a good point.
All right, Luke.
I'm gonna have the same answer as Kyle. I'm going to marry Octavia, but for the reason is that being that I saw her interact with Levitt in a romantic way where she's not like mentally damaged from all the MCAP stuff. So that gave me enough sign off to say she's still in there. Perfectly
and she's
fine.
Officially not Blood Raina. So
yeah, she seems more centered and normal. So Octavia's good marry. I'm going to bang Echo and kill Hope just because I don't like the short hair on Hope.
I'm going to marry Octavia because she's been like a day one bae for me. And my gosh, do you guys remember when we were complaining about how she had to full on redemption and pull that off masterfully or else we were going to hate her forever? Oh my God.
She did it in episode 2.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It didn't take long. Yeah. She's back. She's bae. I'm going to bang Echo. Honestly, just she's really hot. And then I'm going to kill Hope because I didn't like her attitude in this episode. Get it together, Hope.
All right, well, real quick, the reason why I didn't bang Echo, too, is because of her role in Chad Rourke's movie. And, you know, take a look at that movie. She's pretty crazy.
So that's going to do it for the episode. We're going to be following season 7 of The 100 weekly with the podcast after every episode. Next up is episode 10, which as of right now is untitled. That'll be coming out after a 2-week hiatus. Also, be on the lookout for our interview with Jason Diaz, aka Levitt. That episode will be dropping sometime next week. As always, if you like what you heard, give Benchtown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram and subscribe to our show on Spotify and the Apple Podcast app. Once again, we are Benchtown TV, and thanks for listening.